I'm Lina Akhmudu. Welcome to Health Chat. A new study published in the Lancet Medical Journal finds that stillbirth, maternal death, and ectopic pregnancies rose during the coronavirus pandemic, possibly because women had reduced access to medical services. More with VOA's Marama Diallo on the data covering 6 million pregnant women in nearly 20 countries.
Little Malek was born at the beginning of March. His mother, Hind Shurgen, found out she was pregnant during the coronavirus pandemic. She was told to minimize trips to doctors or hospitals where services were stretched by the number of patients with the virus. Eventually, she fell sick and was diagnosed remotely with pneumonia. But after her illness, her doctor did an antigen test that confirmed she's had COVID-19.
It's just a huge, you know, world that's really unknown. And it really pushed me over the edge. And I was so stressed out throughout the whole end of my pregnancy because of that. You know, what if, what if, what if?
After several scans, Shurgen was assured her baby was developing normally. But she couldn't stop worrying.
You're kind of, you know, playing a lottery with this information. I didn't get tested again for antigens, but I did carry out the fear with me and this worry and constant, like, second-guessing everything I did.
Professor Asma Khalil, an obstetrician at St. George's Hospital in London, is among a group of doctors studying the impact of the virus on women and their pregnancies.
We included more than 6 million pregnant women. From 40 studies from 17 countries. And we compared the pregnancy outcomes during the COVID-19 pandemic with the period before the pandemic.
The report published in the Lancet Medical Journal found that the number of stillbirths and the number of women who died during pregnancy rose by nearly a third during the pandemic. The number of women who needed emergency care for ectopic pregnancies, where the fetus is growing outside of the womb, was 6 times higher in 2020 than the year before. Also in the report, a significant increase in the number of women suffering stress and anxiety. Khalil says stillbirths and deaths are not a direct cause of infection from COVID-19, but from what she describes as collateral damage of the pandemic. Across the world, lockdowns prevented women from traveling to hospitals for checkups. Co-author of the Lancet report, Professor Shakila Tangaratnam from the University of Birmingham, advises some caution over the data.
If you look at stillbirths, the figures are a bit more. But because of the rarity of the condition of stillbirths, the proportion itself is still quite low. We are talking about number of stillbirths around 1,000 in high-income settings and another 1,000 in a low-income setting. And again, this is something that will need to be reviewed constantly.
She says there is no doubt the pandemic has had an adverse influence on women's health, but many more studies need to be done.
How much it is? How generalizable this is across countries as well as across the income status. What are the specific factors that contribute most? So these are information that we still need to continue to report and collect.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Before the coronavirus pandemic hit, 82% of clinics in the tiny landlocked nation of Eswatini had no hot running water. But that has changed in the last 6 months with the installation of solar-powered water heaters in every single government clinic nationwide. This opens up clean health facilities to up to 10,000 people a day in a nation that has long struggled with building up its infrastructure. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Lumbamba, Eswatini.
For more than a year, nurse Lindiwe Magongo has seen to the needs of 600 patients per week at her small clinic near the capital of Eswatini, the nation formerly known as Swaziland. Until very recently, she's fought both ordinary health issues and the global coronavirus pandemic without the most basic healthcare tool, clean, hot water. Doctors say hand washing, hygiene, and sanitation are key to curbing the spread of illness. The coronavirus has claimed nearly 700 lives in this nation of just over 1 million people. Until this month, the 92 government clinics in this mountainous nation lacked this critical tool. But in recent months, a multinational initiative has installed an outdoor solar-powered hand-washing station in every clinic. On a recent weekday, Magongo beamed at the new hand-washing station at the gate of her clinic. Dozens of Emiswati, as the people of Eswatini are called, had lined up before the clinic opened and were now filing in after washing their hands. It's not just a concrete structure consisting of a heavy sink and a durable solar water heater, she said, though it is, literally, that. To her, it represents possibility. Magongo says the hot water station is also used to clean the clinic and brew tea for staff. Patients can take water home if they like.
I would call it a sculpture, because for us it's going to be here for quite some time. We are saving a lot because this is economically accessible to use. No electricity failures, or even if we experience power cuts, this service continues to work. So in that sense, it is economical, and it's going to be here for quite some time. We are really, really grateful.
VOA asked Acting Prime Minister Tema Masuku what seems like an obvious question. Why didn't the government do this before? Why wait for foreign donors? He said it's not that easy for a cash-strapped government with limited manufacturing capabilities and unreliable electricity supply. When the pandemic hit, he said, Eswatini struggled to acquire basic items like masks.
One of the priorities was to build the clinics first, because you can't put the stuff here without clinics. As we were building the clinics, as we have 92 of them now, those public health facilities, the stakeholders came in. They wanted to assist, and we gladly accepted that. So everything is prioritized. Health is one of our major priorities, and this is why we thought building the clinics before we get the hot water would be ideal.
At her small clinic in Eswatini, Magongo said it also breaks what she described as a stigma around hand washing.
Whenever we wash hands, it means we are going to eat. Going and washing hands all the time, it's an African. We grow up knowing that it's an African to keep on washing hands. Why? There's always that why. Why do you keep on washing your hands?
So how do you break the taboo? How do you break that?
This is going to break it. And COVID-19 has also helped us in breaking that.
A year ago, Australian solar energy entrepreneur Robert Fraser landed in Eswatini for 2 weeks of meetings. Then the pandemic struck. And as he sat in lockdown halfway across the world from his Sydney home, he thought, why not do something? In that year, his company, with extra funding from the German government, has installed 92 of these 3,500 stations.
There was a very obvious need, and we had the products, we had the relationships, the expertise to actually deliver a project that would really make a difference in a very short amount of time, and actually, to be frank, for a reasonably small amount of money.
Fraser stresses that he's not running a charity. They're a for-profit company, and this project has paved the path for a $100 million solar storage project in Eswatini. Health Minister Lizzie Nkosi says hand hygiene is a key weapon against the infection, and one that Eswatini needs while it launches its mass vaccination campaign in the coming weeks.
It's not only bringing hot water in places where we would never have dreamt would have hot water, but it's reinforcing age-old infection prevention measures that the ministry employs every time, whether we have an outbreak of measles, of diarrhea, an outbreak.
Don't take clean, hot water for granted, she said. Anita Powell, VOA News, Lubamba, Eswatini.
We remain in Eswatini. The small, impoverished African nation had much to fear when the pandemic finally landed within its borders. The pandemic has been extremely disruptive for people there, top officials say, but they have also learned some valuable lessons. Once again, here is VOA's Anita Powell.
Eddie Simulane is a patient. Every 2 months, this HIV-positive father of four wakes up early to line up at a government clinic near Eswatini's capital for his supply of free antiretroviral medications. The Emiswati are no strangers to pandemics. This small nation, formerly known as Swaziland, has one of the world's highest HIV prevalence rates, estimated at over 27%. But it's not that pandemic that scares him, Simulane says. It's coronavirus. He says he's lucky to have not fallen ill, but says it's thrown his life into disarray.
Here in Eswatini, COVID-19 has taken many lives, you know, that I've heard of. And the difficult part of it is the economy. The economy has been down, and there's been no jobs for everybody. for something like a year now.
He's not exaggerating the effect of this pandemic. While Eswatini has only reported some 17,000 cases and just under 670 deaths, its small size multiplies that effect. Eswatini, according to the Africa Centers for Disease Control, has seen 1,400 confirmed cases per 100,000 people and 55 deaths per 100,000 people. But the population is just over a million people. According to the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center, Eswatini's COVID-19 mortality rate stands at 3.9%. That's more than twice the U.S. death rate of 1.8%, and also higher than the death rate in the continent's epicenter and Eswatini's biggest neighbor, South Africa, which is 3.4%. And it has affected lives at all levels of society. Acting Prime Minister Themba Masuku fell into this job because Prime Minister Ambrose Dlamini died of COVID-19 in December. He said the past year has been tough.
When it started, we tried to manage it. The first wave, I think we fairly managed them. But the second wave, which was brutal, this is when we felt overwhelmed. But it taught us certain things that we have now put in place so that if the third wave, we think we will be more prepared than the first and second waves because we didn't have the experience.
But Health Minister Lizzie Nkosi says their records found that HIV-positive COVID patients did not fare as badly as they had feared.
What we've learned, not just us, but across the world, is that HIV turned out not to be such a major factor. It is a factor, but in terms of the people that get severely ill and the people that we've lost, I mean, from our death audit that we did recently, we found that 82% of the people that have died have had comorbidities, and about 80% of those had either diabetes mellitus, high blood pressure, and the combination of those.
That is cold comfort for Simulane, who, like people across the globe, says he struggles with COVID anxiety.
Yeah, I'm worried. Because actually, I don't know how you contacted the virus. Just don't know. That is what worries me the most.
Nkosi says the nation is starting to vaccinate health workers and will soon expand the vaccination scheme. That, she hopes, will finally help dispel the fear that hovers over this nation like fog over its majestic mountains. Anita Pal, VOA News, Babane, Eswatini.
Sudanese journalists working in the capital, Khartoum, are urging health authorities in the country to include them as part of frontline workers who should be vaccinated against COVID-19. Journalists say the nature of their work exposes them to many people and puts them at risk of contracting the disease. Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Sudanese journalists here say they are constantly interacting with officials, health facilities, and various individuals, which puts them at a greater risk of contracting the coronavirus than the general public. Mashair Daraj, who works as a correspondent for the United Arab Emirates-based Alain TV channel, says she feels unsafe covering public events during COVID.
We interact on a daily basis with community members who could be positive or have come in contact with those who have the disease. That is why the government should consider and include journalists as part of the ongoing vaccination campaign.
Early last month, Sudanese health ministry officials secured 8,400,000 vaccine doses, which they said would first be administered to health workers, the elderly, and people with underlying health conditions. Dr. Amal El-Fateh, the head of the World Health Organization's department at the Sudan's Federal Ministry of Health, said earlier the vaccine will be given free of charge to targeted groups identified by the ministry as high risk, which is about 20% of the country's population.
The vaccination strategy will prioritize the most vulnerable groups and severe complications based on the results of the pathological sentimentation analysis. The first group will include all frontline workers, elderly, and those with underlying diseases who have been categorized as the most affected according to the latest pandemic health report.
Sudanese journalist Hassan Barkia tested positive for the virus in April last year when visiting a quarantine center in Khartoum. Barkia says he had horrific experience for over 2 weeks after self-isolating. He says the sickness has affected him emotionally and affected his work and family. He insists having vaccinated journalists will allow them to do their work and inform the public about the pandemic.
This will raise precautions against the disease among journalists because they are needed to work closely with the health authorities. They need to get to know more about the disease, how the vaccine works, and to minimize rumors that are spread about the vaccine.
Another Sudanese journalist, Musab Muhammad Sharif, who works for a local newspaper in Khartoum, says journalists should be protected against the disease so they are free to move about and inform the public.
The government doesn't put journalists as priority group to get vaccinated will be injustice against them. And I personally will regard it as a weakness from the transitional government and the Minister of Health. We will continue writing articles on this issue until the government includes us.
Health authorities have set up more than 20 vaccination centers across Khartoum State. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok and his cabinet were vaccinated on Tuesday. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me with a panel of VOA journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the ongoing trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who is charged in the death of George Floyd. The world reacts unanimously to police brutality in America. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. Now let's go to the Gambia, where Health Minister Dr. Amadou Lamine Samaté has confirmed that some staffers have been selling fake COVID-19 test results, particularly to travelers. He says police are investigating. Pat Nderimbai reports.
Gambia's Health Minister Dr. Amadou Lamine Samaté has confirmed that some staffers have been selling fake COVID test results, particularly to travelers. He said police are investigating. His statement followed an undercover investigation by a Gambian newspaper. Samaté said in an interview yesterday that police made a key arrest early in their probe.
Yes, that has happened.
Samaté said a health worker and a SAC former employee from his ministry were arrested. The scandal has raised questions about the credibility of the country's present and past COVID test results. But Samaté offered reassurances that Gambia's test results are as reliable as those produced by other countries.
People should accept the COVID test from the Gambia because the generality of the test would have been genuine. Once in a while, you see these cases, but I'm sure you've had bigger countries with more sophisticated equipment having complained of false COVID test certificates. And we have equally received patients or passengers in the country who were later tested by us, and they were also found to be positive.
Samaté has denied his ministry was complicit in the sale of the fake COVID results and says other workers shouldn't be tainted by the case.
I will describe it as a rare incident because I'm aware of all the good tests that have been done. I'm aware of all the good certificates that have been issued to individuals. I'm aware of a good system that is going on in this country.
The Gambia recently imposed new COVID-19 regulations, one of which restricts public gatherings. Travelers are required to have COVID test results before flying out. For VOA News, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Zimbabwe is poised to be among the first countries in the world to issue citizens COVID-19 certificates, which will be linked to passports and identity card. Adi Gondo reports from Bulawayo.
The Ministry of Health and Child Care says the certificates will be linked to the passports to travelers departing the country and will be required from arrivals in a bid to curb the incidence of fake COVID-19 certificates. The ministry says it has the records of people that have been vaccinated and that the new card will have security features which can be scanned and verified. The card will have a QR code for verification of information. Observers say it's unclear how many fake COVID-19 certificates are in circulation, but their very existence exacerbates the challenge of creating a secure regime. Zimbabwe's borders are currently closed to ordinary travelers. The rollout of vaccines has gotten off to a slow start. The ministry says 61,093 people have gotten the jabs, with 6,569 getting their second doses. The acting provincial medical director, Welcome Mlilo, says the certificate is going to be inevitable, with a few countries already creating some form of a COVID-19 passport, including Israel, China, Bahrain, the US, the UK, and the European Union.
So, in a sense, a vaccine passport is proof that you've tested negative or you've been protected against certain infections. So this is an old idea that is being packaged in a new way. For years, people have traveled to certain areas in the world. They've been asked to show papers or a medical passport, or what has been called a yellow card. This was created by WHO to prove that the certain individuals would have gotten vaccines against diseases like yellow fever, cholera, and rubella.
Observers say COVID-19 passports would be useful in curbing the spread of the pandemic in the face of vaccinating the entire population. Itai Risike of Community Working Group on Health, CWGH, weighs in.
We can also learn from the discussions and the processes that are happening elsewhere. I think they are now at an advanced stage of making it mandatory for one to have a COVID-19 passport if you are to access public amenities such as shops, gyms, and so forth. So Zimbabwe definitely will now need to start discussions and dialogue on how this COVID-19 passport arrangement is going to be, you know, implemented, and if ever it is going to be implemented.
The city of Blawaya started a vaccination program with China's Sinovac and Sinopharm vaccines that's targeting 110,000 residents. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
A Swiss startup is looking to boost confidence in the safety of air travel amid the coronavirus pandemic by using decades-old technology. VOA's Arash Arabasadi shines light on this story.
A virus-killing robot roams the aisles of an airplane in Zurich. The robot must operate without a human to deliver its waves of ultraviolet light. UVA co-founder Jodak Elmazur explains.
It's quite an old technology, but it's quite dangerous. That's why we want to take the worker out of the range of the light. So that's why we made a robot.
Excess exposure to ultraviolet or UV radiation can cause cancers in humans. But UVIA's founders say the decades-old UVC technology delivered by the autonomous robot has the upside of killing the coronavirus. Elmiger says using light to sanitize a plane is safer than cleaning solutions.
UVC doesn't make any traces or chemistry, so that's also very important for the traveler, that you know that you have a safe place and there is no chemical residue on the seats or everywhere.
One robot can disinfect an entire single-aisle airplane in 13 minutes. That's welcome news for Swiss regional airline Helvetic Airways, says spokesman Matti Gönen.
As an airline, at the moment, it's really important that we can restore the confidence in air travel. So if our passengers, if our crew know our aircraft is safe, there is no viruses, no bacteria, it could help to fly again and to have a good feeling to fly again.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration says UVC radiation is a known disinfectant for air, water, and non-porous surfaces, but can be blocked by something as simple as dust. UVIA currently has three robot prototypes and recently demonstrated one of them at the Zurich airport, where traffic dropped 75% last year. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Now, the World Bank says the economic growth in sub-Saharan Africa contracted by 2% in 2020, and prospects for recovery are strengthening despite the spread of new waves of the COVID-19 pandemic. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Kama reports.
The World Bank's biannual economic analysis for Africa says a slower spread of the coronavirus, strong agricultural growth, and a faster-than-expected recovery in commodity prices have helped many African economies weather the economic storm induced by the pandemic. Albert Zoufak is the World Bank chief economist for Africa.
We do see sub-Saharan Africa poised for recovery. We see prospects for recovery that are strengthening as countries deploy measures to contain pandemic new waves, but also implement efforts to roll out vaccine at a higher speed.
The report, titled The Future of Work in Africa, Emerging Trends in Digital Technology Adoption, notes that economic recovery hinges on countries deepening reforms that create jobs, encourage investment, and enhance competitiveness. The resurgence of the pandemic in late 2020, with daily infections about 40% higher than during the first wave, and limited additional fiscal support, will pose an uphill battle as policymakers pursue stronger growth and improved livelihoods for their people. But sub-Saharan Africa's recovery is expected to vary across countries, as the senior World Bank economist explains.
The good news is our three largest economies will be back to positive growth in 2021, but it's still going to be quite a low growth, around 1.4% in Nigeria, 0.9% in Angola. South Africa could grow at maybe 3%, but the rest of Africa is actually growing faster. There is also a clear rebound in consumption and investment as confidence comes back to countries that have managed to contain the virus.
Non-resource-intensive countries such as Cote d'Ivoire and Kenya and mining-dependent economies such as Botswana and Guinea are expected to see robust growth this year, driven by a rebound in private consumption and investment as confidence strengthens and exports increase. The new report also notes that African countries can speed up their recovery by ramping up existing support efforts, especially for women, youth, and other vulnerable groups. Zofak says the deepening debt crisis is a growing concern.
Our countries have been piling up debt at a very fast pace, and that debt was not only riskier, but costlier. So when the pandemic hit and commodity prices collapsed, the debt situation became even more serious. The number of African countries that are at high risk of debt distress has increased significantly. Basically, a country like Zambia not being able to service its debt.
Reducing debt burdens will release resources for public investment in areas such as education, health, and infrastructure. Additionally, reforms that address digital infrastructure gaps and make the digital economy more inclusive, ensuring affordability, but also building skills for all segments of society, are essential to improve connectivity and generate more and better jobs. Zofak gives more details.
What is absolutely clear is that Africa has not wasted the opportunity of this crisis. More people in Africa are using e-commerce. Just as an example, the volume of transaction on Jumia has more than doubled in the first 6 months of 2020. That's Africans using e-commerce more aggressively.
The next 12 months will be critical for leveraging the African Continental Free Trade Area to deepen African countries' integration into regional and global value chains. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA. Coming up, retired U.S. Army General David Petraeus, who commanded the 101st Airborne Division in Iraq in 2003, will ask the general his thoughts about the most salient national security threats and the U.S. military footprint in Afghanistan and Iraq. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with our voices on VOA.